I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from a UAE targeted the most after Iran itself in the war that Trump and Netanyahu started 2 weeks ago today. Though maybe Israel has been targeted more, and we just don't know it because everything's censored in the place that led the Gaza genocide. Trump's war literally hit the assets of countries like Palestine, Lebanon, the UAE, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Cyprus, Azerbaijan, the USA, and UK. But it also hits the world's poor, from the global south to the already destitute of the Epstein-class-run NATO nations, thanks to higher prices for everything from petrol to fertilizer to helium for MRI scanners. Thousands have been killed in US carpet bombing for billions of dollars already. As predicted, Tehran uses the Strait of Hormuz, the world's strategic choke point, as its weapon of mass destruction. It's a centerpiece of the GCC and the world's top oil exporter and largest GCC country by size and population is Saudi Arabia. Guardian of the holiest sites of Islam, it is being urged by Trump to join in his war on Iran, despite Saudi consistently urging diplomacy and de-escalation. Saudi Arabia previously called out the US-UK-EU armed Gaza genocide as a genocide. Joining me now from Saudi Arabia's capital, a Riyadh targeted by Iranian drones and missiles this week, is the senior non-resident fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based Research Institute, the Gulf International Forum, and fellow at Dubai's Arab Gulf States Institute, Dr. Abdulaziz Al-Ghashian. Thank you so much, Dr. Abdulaziz Al-Ghashian, for coming on Going Underground. So apart from Lebanon, Gaza, all those countries, GCC countries getting targeted the most. Dubai, the main target. You've been targeted. Riyadh's been targeted. I have to ask you, are GCC countries involved in the targeting of Iran? Because we had a former head of intelligence of the U.S. Pacific Fleet on Going Underground the other day, and he said he was surprised that the GCC countries were not allowing the targeting of Iran from their territory.
Well, firstly, Afshin, thank you very much for having me. I think there will always be that, not only speculation, but there will always be that kind of intent to try to assert that there is this GCC-Israel axis. A lot of the times people want to make to try to create that discourse in order to impose a particular reality on the ground. And I think what is happening right now is basically that the GCC states are making sure that they don't want to be part of this war. And one of the ways that they don't, you know, one of the reasons why they don't want to be part of this war is because they believe, and as I'm sure you heard loads of times, this is not their war. And they had lobbied much against it anyway. But they understand very much that they're really being pressured to really join the war in order for many people to assert and say, you see, these GCC states are fighting side by side with Israel. We have now created de facto a new region. The new region is here, the new regional order. And this is something that I think many people will find allergic to because no one wants anything imposed upon them. So I think even listening to some people in DC and other places, they're literally saying things like, well, Saudi Arabia is offensively entered into the mix. And I have to say, this is very difficult to see. I find this very uncredible, and I find this also putting the GCC states in more of harm's way. So it's very concerning to see this disinformation campaign that is really taking place.
Yeah, there's so much misinformation about, clearly. I mean, the GCC countries are imposing different types of censorship to try and get a handle on it. I mean, what is it, the Muslim Brotherhood's power overseas? Because has it shocked you to see the kind of lies told about the GCC whilst you've been bombed in Riyadh? Of course, we've been bombed here in Dubai. This kind of disinformation, and I'm being accused of being a patsy for the UAE government here, when I go, no, this is just not true. There are rumors that there are capital flight limits already being instituted. All sorts of disinformation.
Well, unfortunately, anybody studying the GCC or the studying kind of the Gulf, and particularly Saudi Arabia, will know that they've always had an uphill battle with their narrative. And let me just also say this. I mean, we're not also perfect. I mean, we are, you know, we're not immune from mistakes. But a lot of the times it's how people frame these mistakes and kind of how do they amplify them. And unfortunately, just to illustrate to you how silly these things are and how unserious these things are, a few weeks ago, after the rift of the Saudi-UAE rift that took place because of Yemen at the end of last year and early this year, Saudi Arabia was accused of siding with Iran. I mean, people don't remember that, you know, and siding with the Muslim Brotherhood. And all of a sudden now people are saying, well, Saudi's actually joined in the fight against Iran. So you see that there is a genuine just unseriousness about the narrative of the GCC. And this is really an instrumentalization of this narrative. And also, let me just say this. A big part of this is also something we have to really start looking looking in the mirror and really trying to think about, well, why was there a vacuum? You know, not a security vacuum, but a discursive vacuum that is taking place here. So I think one of the things that are coming out even from this war is that I think there is even a notion growing inside the GCC by saying, listen, we've found ourselves being boxed in right now by other people. And I have to say, Afshan, one of the fascinating things to see here is the materialization of language into policy right before our very eyes. Tweet by tweet, statement by statement, it's taking place. And so there are people that are saying, holy moly, what is going on here, man? We need to start really thinking about how we're being narrated elsewhere. So I think, you know, there's all these silly things and accusations about you and about me. And this is just part and parcel of being part of the Gulf and in the Gulf. So a very warm welcome to you being in the Gulf, I have to say.
Well, the cat is certainly convinced behind you of what you say. It was difficult to know what was going on as regards to the rift between Saudi Arabia and UAE. But let's get back, obviously, to the case at hand, which is there a place, there was for Switzerland during the Second World War, is there a place for neutrality at a time like this when it's clear that we've had a genocide that we witnessed in Gaza? And who is benefiting from these lies and the misinformation?
In my opinion, I've heard some of the commentary and analysis by Gulf colleagues, and they assert that they're trying to be neutral. In my opinion, I don't think we are neutral. I actually think we were lobbying very hard not to have this war. I don't think this makes us neutral, in my opinion.
Lobbying with the bases, isn't that the question? I mean, if GCC countries had said, right, not only can they not use the bases, obviously some of the bases are on US sovereign land, as in Bahrain, but in Saudi Arabia and the UAE, they could have said, no, you have to go if you start a war in this region we don't even know why the war is taking place in one sense.
Well, I'll have to say this about regarding the bases. This is a result of really the Gulf War, and this has to be contextualized also. And I think what there is that now there's this discussion about security. And in my opinion, I think the Iranian retaliation probably reinforced the notion that probably the bases will probably be here because to create more options in the future. And I think so. This is one of the pull and push of the international
relations. The reason why. I mean, there's a headline here, Aramco, and this isn't disinformation because it's coming from Aramco, the Saudi Arabian state oil company. Aramco warns of catastrophic consequences from Iran war. This wouldn't be happening if there weren't bases in Saudi Arabia, clearly. And it wouldn't be attacks on Dubai if the UAE had forged a BRICS summit in Dubai with their Iranian counterparts. Of course, they're both members of BRICS.
Exactly. No, I think, in my opinion, that is not part of the picture. That's part of the picture. That's not the complete part of the picture. The reason being is because I think they made it very clear that the overarching strategy is to raise the cost of the war, is to globalize the response and make sure that basically the United States will start to feel some of the pressure and therefore scale down their operation. So it's not about bases.
Well, clearly, and I think clearly that's the reason, but Iran isn't going to attack India, even though Modi was hugging Netanyahu the other day because of BRICS, because of the North-South corridor, and because India doesn't host US bases.
Well, India is very much aligned with Netanyahu. I mean, so And
because it's the bases that matter. It's the bases that matter, isn't it? It's the physical infrastructure of the bases that make a country a target. So Britain finds itself targeted because of its Akrotiri base used by the United States in Cyprus.
Yeah, I find the fact that with some of these accusations that they're using the bases, or it's because of the essence of these bases, a legitimization of some of the tactics that they would use to escalate the war. I mean, let's not forget, one of the reasons why they wanted to have relations with Saudi Arabia and other of the Gulf countries while knowing that the bases were actually there in the first place. So, you know, the bases seems to be something of a problem that came later on. Moreover, let me say this. During the Iran-Israel war, the 12-day war last June, the position that the GCC states found themselves in was actually, while concerning, but it was actually proved to be stable and proved to be strong because of the statements that they made. They condemned the Israeli strikes. But, you know, the American bases were not used then. And also, when the United States did attack in June 2025, the retaliation wasn't really, it was a telegraphed kind of retaliation on Adid, on Qatar, which was mediating. So I think the bases and the reference to the bases seems to be something they are trying to legitimize these mad dog tactics that they're using. And I think, let me just also add this, in my estimation, while there is a disinformation campaign coming from some people in the United States and some people in Israel, because this is to answer your question, they are, you know, some people, this Netanyahu group and the pro-war lobby in the United States are the ones that are benefiting from this chaos. And what they want is to create some sort of, you know, anti-Iran axis in the region that is an alignment between Netanyahu and Saudi Arabia, which Saudi Arabia does not want to be a part of. But there's also a disinformation campaign coming from some extremists in Iran. And all of a sudden, we in the Gulf are the recipients of disinformation campaigns. And basically, people are talking over our heads. And so it is very difficult to be in the middle of other people's wars. And we are basically, Afshin, the front line of other people's wars, a war that we do not want to be part of. So to be part of this kind of position, people will try to narrate the way they want to narrate and legitimize their approach. And so I think it's very difficult. And also, let me say this, lies are very bad, but half-truths are far more dangerous. And this is what's taking place in this disinformation campaign. They're using these half-truths here and there. They're using these bits and bobs, you know, disframed statements, decontextualized statements to try to create a narrative in the Gulf and narrate who we are in a very, very difficult time. So I think it's important to be challenged by these questions. It's important, but because I think the response, you know, we have to, it helps explain more the situation and the complexity of the situation.
Dr. Abdulaziz Al-Ghashian, I'll stop you there. More from the Senior Non-Resident Fellow at the Gulf International Forum after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Senior Non-Resident Fellow at the Gulf International Forum, Dr. Abdulaziz Al-Ghashian. Dr. Abdulaziz, we were talking about the disinformation war, about this wider war in this region, this global war, as it were. I was asking about the bases, and you said that that shouldn't be the focus of the question. Of course, Lindsey Graham saying Saudi Arabia will face consequences if it doesn't join the USA-Israel war, and clearly he is close to Trump. But if it's not the bases, what about the fact that there are reports that the GCC is cooperating now with Zelensky and that Ukrainian advisors are coming to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the UAE? I mean, do the GCC countries want to alienate Russia now as well, and therefore China? How is it going to navigate this if it has the bases and simultaneously seems to continually side with NATO nations whilst trying to retain neutrality.
Yeah. Well, I think this
I mean, MBZ, I should say, spoke with Putin.
Yeah. And Saudi as well. I think that, yeah. And so I think it speaks to how the Saudi and the region see themselves. They see themselves as basically a beacon or a recipient where they could do business with everyone. Now, this is going to be very difficult because historically we were part of the Western camp. And so now, you know, this is some sort of the residual effects of trying to get out of that previous kind of order that we were in. But I think when it comes to the response and the working of with Zelensky, I think this is clear that they are now, in my opinion, how I see it, is part of the whole diversification of military procurement, which is what I think what we will be doing more and more after this war. And I think by trying to get to the Zelensky, by working with Zelensky, at the same time working with Russia to probably cooperate on the oil prices, you know, you get to see that there is a lot of multifaceted dualities happening all at the same time. In my opinion, I think that's one of the challenges and actually very fascinating things about studying the GCC and studying Saudi Arabia in particular, is how do these seemingly contradicting things happen at the same time? The way they're balancing this is going to be a challenge. But I think right now, given that where the war is and given that they're focusing on de-escalation and restraint rather than confronting Iran or joining the attack on Iran, notwithstanding whatever our dear friend Lindsey Graham is saying in Washington, D.C., and because we have to mention how brave he was. You know, he was drumming the beats of beating the drums of war, and then came here, and then 15 hours later he's back in the United States safe and sound. So we all have to keep him in our prayers. But what I'm thinking is that this is part of the diversification of this, and I think in my opinion, you know, this is where we're heading. We're heading towards de-escalation and restraint, and so to boost that restraint, to boost that neutrality, we are now entering into some sort of anti-drone warfare, which I think
the problem with that strategy is you end up being targeted by everyone, and we've got to remember, I mean, I know you were being sarcastic about Lindsey Graham, we have to realize, I mean, there were some reports that American soldiers have been being told about this messianic, you've got to remember how religious the war is from the United States' point of view. Religion playing a far greater part, arguably, in the war from the NATO nation side than it is from Iran's side. Poses grave dangers. We're recording this interview by Saturday. We don't know whether Israel will use a nuclear weapon. But clearly, given the censored, it's difficult to get information out of Israel, given the existential way Israel is running this war, the Samson option may be an option. Is this really a time to talk to Zelensky about drone making and all the rest of it, or to take a side and say, look, we are going to side with multipolarity, which they have anyway, but we can't be associated with regimes that were arming the genocide.
Yeah. I think personally, this is something that's going to be a challenge. And in my opinion, I think this war has illustrated a few things. This has illustrated the fact that, okay, diplomacy with Iran, albeit there was a desire to really de-escalate, to reorder the relationship, reconfigure the relationship, and that diplomacy has reached its limitation because the United States has complicated it in many ways, this via Netanyahu. And in my opinion, I think Israel's behavior in the region has also isolated itself to a large extent. People now are looking at Israel as, or Netanyahu as, this spoiler of this region. And people here in the GCC know that they were the spoiler of this GCC-Iran rapprochement. What did this thing also remind us of, my opinion, is also the centrality of the United States' presence in the region. This war has reminded us that, you know, whether we like it or not, the role of the United States is still the main actor that's not, you know, non-regional actor in the region. And therefore, I anticipate that there's going to be a different kind of diplomacy, or there should be at least, where we have to tame the beast there. What's going and trying to channel it in the right way. Because right now, we're on the receiving end of a lot of uncalculated moves, a lot of moves that just seem very destructive, to be honest with you. So I think while there are no good options, this is the only luxury that we have. What's less best or less worse, I'm sorry. And so I think it's going to be a necessity to deal with whoever in the region, whether it's Russia, Ukraine, or the United States, or I'm sorry, globally. So I'm not surprised that there will be more cooperation with the United States, and I actually expect it more.
More cooperation, even though usually the reaction to this...
Go on, I'm sorry.
I mean, usually the reaction to a non-geographically regional actor exerting this much kind of de facto destruction is to kick them out. So Russia kicked out the Americans in the 1990s. China, of course, kicked them out in the 20th century. And Latin America kicking out the North American Yankees out in the 1980s. I mean, we could talk all day perhaps about the cultural phenomenon here as regards the class structures in GCC countries and how that affects this situation. Did you actually mean getting a closer relationship with the United States?
No, I said more intensive. And they're going to try to... Let me just share with you this. Just like what they try to use with Israel, which is this bear hug. Now, I don't think we're going to bear hug anybody. I don't think anybody could bear hug the United States.
But the GCC is trying that, right? They were offering him trillions of dollars recently to Trump.
Yes. But this is apparently is not enough. So we have to really rethink how can we be more impactful in DC and basically try to influence the decision-making. The issue is, I think, with Donald Trump is the fact that you only have leverage with him only if you're talking with him. And then once people kind of leave the room, then the leverage is gone. So what is that infrastructure of maintaining that leverage to keep that momentum that was there? Which is what everybody wants. I mean, he wants the trillions that he claimed to get from here. So how can we keep that part and parcel of and keep basically some of the bad activities and the negative backlash at bay? This is what I think that there has to be more investment, and this is where I think they will have to begin to work harder and reevaluate what went wrong. How can so much work kind of be upended just that easily, and just from someone who came to the region, asked for 10, 20, I don't know, for and then, what was it, 11, 12, 13 trillion. These are the numbers that he's throwing off just at the top of his head.
I'm not sure how that works with Saudi GDP, in fairness.
Exactly.
Certainly your viewpoint is the same. It's shared in Beijing and Moscow, and Vladimir Putin facing criticism at home for pursuing similar close conversations and talks with Donald Trump. But I suppose your think tank is based in D.C. I got to ask you that given that Trump is even able to not care as much about the markets and the impact, of course, on the poor in the United States, but the markets themselves. Does Miriam Adelson's money have more sway than all of that, than all these bear hugs from these different nations and all the rest of it? Ultimately, it's the messianism of a particular brand of Zionism that is far more powerful than anything.
I think this is probably a trend that's happening right now. And this religious trend is something that's actually amplifying, in my opinion, some of these dormant kind of perceptions regarding Israel. I'm always telling people that, you know, you think that attacking Iran and doing what you did and kind of spoiling that rapprochement process that we were having, you think that makes us look, you know, good. It looks at Israel, who, with this greater Israel rhetoric that's coming out right now, you know, and this basically this expansionism that's taking place with this whole religiousifying discourse that's also happening. And I think it's becoming more unappetizing and more unappealing for people to be associated now or associating with this kind of Israel. And I think therefore they think they're taking a step forward, but actually in the region, they're taking 13, 14 steps backwards. Now, and when it comes to this is now becoming very difficult because I think Donald Trump seems to be ideological, in my opinion, when it comes to this. He seems to be someone who is just really improvising as he goes forward.
Or he's being blackmailed. Or he's famously transactional.
I don't know.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I mean, just if you could finish the point very quickly, because I want to ask one question before we wrap up.
No. And so I think he's just someone who is constantly, I think, you know, this is exactly what we wanted to avoid. We wanted to avoid the whims that come out of anywhere that influences the region. You know, let me just say this theoretically, if I may. What I'm trying to do was work on an agency that the region should work, should cooperate and basically solve its own issues from within the region. We try to shield the region from this external forces that are coming out, but we were not successful. Now, this is one of the reasons why I think there is immense frustration
I think that. Okay, well, just finally, because we're running out of time, as I said, difficult to do all that with the bases. But Claire, if you were advising the Iranian government right now, you would say they need nuclear weapons. I mean, the war would end tomorrow if the Iranian leadership said, "I have nuclear weapons. We have nuclear weapons," because it was them not having nuclear weapons that led to the attack.
Well, I think this is one of the aspects that they are discussing. They're discussing this aspect, but this means to me that looks like we're just heading more into not only militarization of the region, but a nuclearization of the region as well. Because now this whole discourse and rhetoric of nuclear proliferation, this is why this war was unleashing the Pandora box of chaos and instability. And I think right now everyone is going to be basically distrustful of any kind of diplomatic approach. So it's very, very difficult to see some sort of rosy picture ahead. There's some people that are optimistic. I wish I was as optimistic as they are. So I think when it comes to this, there seems to be more antagonism and more kind of really jostling, and I won't say jostling, but really more of a confrontational stance and a more military buildup. And this is not what the GCC states want. They want to focus on their economy. But I think in order to have a prosperous economy, you have to protect that economy. So I think now, you know, we're heading into an uncertain times, but really the only thing that's uncertain is that it's going to be very concerning. That's the only thing that's certain.
Dr. Abdulaziz Alghashian, thank you.
My pleasure.
That's it for the show. Our thoughts are with all those affected by the war in West Asia. We'll be back on Monday with an admiral of the U.S. Navy who ran CENTCOM, or Central Command, of the entire United States Armed Forces. He was reported to have resigned over a possible future war on Iran. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, now to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.